You're listening to the AIFVF podcast, your audio-based guide to a handful of highlights from the upcoming 48th annual Athens International Film and Video Festival, brought to you by WOUB Public Media. I am producer and co-host of this podcast, Danny Wasserman, and today's episode is a little different from our others. Emily Votaw and I got the opportunity to speak to Anne Kemmerly and her son, Luke, also known as the gay porn star Levi Carter, and star of the documentary Leave It to Levi, which will screen at the 48th annual Athens International Film and Video Festival in October 2021. Some of our local Athens listeners might know Anne as Miss Kemmerly from Athens High School, where she used to teach English. Some of you may have even been her students, as I was when I was 16 years old. When Anne first learned that Luke was working in porn, it was through a friend. In a small town, word travels fast, and she had an incredibly difficult time dealing with some really complicated feelings as she and Luke spent the next few years trying to reacclimate their relationship as mother and son. Their story is incredibly touching, and we're so glad we got to talk to the two of them on this podcast, because watching these two interact is so wholesome, as you'll see in just a little bit. Once again, before we get into the interview, here is Festival Director David Colagiovanni to talk about why Leave It to Levi is such a special film to be included in the Athens Festival.
I mean, if there was ever a story about Athens, I mean, I love when a story comes out of our area. A couple years ago, The Farmsteaders, about Laurel Valley Creamery, which was just an amazing film about like people who live here that we see every week at the farmer's market, slinging cheese. But this was just like, really, I mean, I had met Anne a few times. I had no idea about any of this. And to kind of, I was just so impressed with Anne's story in this film, particularly like how she kind of just comes to terms, and also like how Luke kind of, like, you see his like identity progress through this whole, like through an hour and a half film, like all these kind of changes that occur in that. And I just remember watching it and just kind of being in awe that this was a story kind of coming from Athens, where you maybe wouldn't expect such a thing to happen.
My name's Anne Kemmerly, and I'm the mother of Levi Carter, also, Lucas Kemmerly.
Absolutely. And that's me. My name is Lucas Kemmerly, and I am the son of Anne Kemmerly, and also known as Levi Carter, and also my drag persona, Sassy Brass, in the movie Leave It to Levi.
Thank you both so much for that. I guess really my first question was, like, how did Leave It to Levi come to be? Like, how did it begin, and did you both anticipate that it would be a documentary that would focus so much on the both of you?
At first, it was a documentary called Fuck Yeah, Levi Carter, where it was just part one. And then it was edited, to take some of the more explicit parts out for the action when we like created this whole new movie, Leave It to Levi. But it kind of, I think it started from there, which was the first part of the movie Levi, which was a documentary from me entering the porn industry at 19. And I didn't tell my mom, but my mom found out. And at that time I was recording a lot of like almost everything that was going on with me. I mean, I know everyone kind of does that now. Back then I was just recording, just me hanging out with my friends or me getting ready and everything. And so I presenting that to my my director, my boss, Jake Jackson, he saw that story and was able to create that first documentary, Fuck Yeah, Levi Carter, which, but that was back in 2013. So then it just kind of grew and grew, and you said don't stop recording and everything. So then we now have 6 years of footage in that whole movie. My director, Jake Jackson, like he has a big soft spot for mothers. So he really saw something with my relationship between my mom and I and our unconditional love, you know, through thick and thin, and also kind of seeing my mom find out about what I did and still loving me and accepting me. And, you know, it's not all good, but it's still, you know, we're still here, if that makes sense. So I don't know. Can you add to this, Mom? I feel like I'm rambling.
The basis for the film was Luke's cell phone videos. And I think we should mention that Jake and Levi, Jake being the co-owner of the Cocky Boys, and Jake appreciated and was privy to the development of the relationship between, or the changes in the relationship between Luke and me during the course of the first 6 years. See, this movie was completed about 2 years ago. It didn't debut in the United States until about a year ago, but then... But anyway, so it's about 6 years worth of footage. And the basis is, you know, those cell phone videos. And then they added the parts where he moves from porn into drag. And then about 2 years ago, they asked me if I wanted to be part of it. And I said, sure. Mm. And so I then joined in into the filming of it all. And my footage is shot, some by Luke, but a lot of my footage is shot by RJ Sebastian, the co-owner of Cocky Boys.
So that leads me right into my first question for you, Luke, which is what made you decide to like film so much of your life back at like the very beginning of all of this? Were you ever anticipating that it was going to be like part of a documentary, or what was the thinking behind that?
I was just having fun at that time. I started filming once I got the iPhone, and you know, I love taking pictures and having a lot of pictures, but I think that probably came from you showing me all the photo albums. Like my mom has my grandma's photo albums. We just have so many pictures. So maybe that's where it started, but I liked pictures, but then once the video aspect came out, I just like making videos. So I just all of a sudden had all these videos. But I had no anticipation of creating a movie, or even like, I wasn't able to see what Jake Jackson was able to see when he saw my footage. But I was just very grateful that he was able to see that.
So I want to change gears a little bit. And I have a question. So I think like, because you mentioned that like this sort of started back in like 2013, and I'm thinking in my head like, okay, I was in high school, that I was a junior in high school, so that was like right around the time that I was in your English class my sophomore year. And I'm thinking about like the local aspect of this, right, and like the fact that this is a very small town, and I think it's really easy when you're a high school student to be really like simultaneously curious about what your teachers' lives are like outside of school, but also like it's very easy not to see your teachers as like whole actual people with like, you know, feelings. And I know that there's a few moments like mentioned in the film and where students would like sort of try to get your goat about, you know, Levi Carter, about what Luke was doing. And I'm wondering, like, was that something that was hard for you? Like, something that you took personally? Or were you able to just sort of, like, brush it off as, like, kids being kids?
It was exceedingly painful. Mm. I knew that people knew. I didn't know how many people knew, obviously. Nobody ever said to me in class, hey, Miss Kimberly, we hear your son's, does pornography, but there were little hints dropped here and there. And one student in particular, and you know what? My mind has blocked out his name. I had to go to the principal for help, because he would put things in his reading journal, put things in papers that he wrote. He'd work the name Levi Carter into a composition, and I was afraid that someday in class he would read aloud. You know how we would have people share what they wrote? I was afraid he was gonna, you know, that he was gonna come out with it. And I was afraid. And I realized at some point that it was harassment. Mm-hmm. And I went to, and of course I had to tell the assistant principal what my son did for a living, but I needed his help. And I said, look, my son is part of, I think I said part of the sex industry, and he has a stage name and his name is Levi. I mean, I just dumped it on him. Mm-hmm. And this was a principal who only stayed for a year. He was only there for a year, and he didn't have any kids. And you know, he felt my pain. And he called this young man into his office. And I think I remember saying to him, look, I want you to know that what my son does is not illegal. But it's very painful for me. And I'm experiencing is sexual harassment. Anyway, long story short, this guy told me the next day he didn't sleep. And then he called this young man. He kind of asked me what I had in mind, you know, what approach I wanted for him to take. And I said, you know, I'm going to trust you. He said, do you want him out of your class? I said, no. But anyway, whatever he said to that young man stopped it. And then I just began to cope with, you know, deciding that, you know, like you said, I had a life outside school, and that I hadn't changed. I was still me, and I still had a job to do. And, you know, I mean, I just also kind of thought the more I worry about this, the less, you know, what good am I doing worrying about it in school? And I just kind of had to let whatever news spread, whatever, you know, I just had to let that go. And my class was my class.
I was wondering, I mean, for both of you, what component of Athens being such a small town like played in this situation and how you both experienced it? I mean, I think sometimes it's easy to forget that Athens is such a small, gossipy type town because it is relatively pretty progressive compared to other places in Ohio, but that doesn't mean much when you get down to the fact that it's a small town and you know, gossip will travel very quickly between people. I mean, what part of how did that play into the situation as you both experienced it?
I was in the middle of a move from Columbus to New York, so I was kind of out of it. I guess I was getting very few, like, are you okay? Or what, this is, like, this doesn't seem right kind of thing, where I think my mom probably, you know, still living there, and also just, this was a job and a life path that I decided to choose that I did not take into consideration my mom's feelings and well-being when I first started. But I mean, I think it was a lot harder on my mom because she was still there, and I think we have different perspectives on small towns. I mean, I still love I think small towns are cute, but I don't want to like be in one because I don't like everyone in my business in a way. And I know my mom doesn't like everyone in the business either. I don't think anyone does.
The real central issue for me is how much one blames oneself, how much, you know, parents are so tied into their kids, right? They are so tied into their kids. And when a kid's on the honor roll, when a kid gets into a good college, when a kid gets a good job, man, it's a source of pride, right? And when your kid decides to do porn, you know, like Luke, you'll have to hear this. I felt so ashamed. Like, how, you know, how did I fail to get the message across, you know, that porn isn't a good choice, right? You know, porn was just totally taboo. I mean, it existed. I knew it existed, but it, you know, it was in back rooms of these little seedy bookstores and, you know, I mean, and it was, I associated it with Larry Flint and the mafia. I associated it with drugs. I associated it with prostitution. I mean, it was part of that world. And I felt so ashamed. And so I felt like I wanted to hide it, but that was impossible because Luke had already shared it with folks that he used to work with, and there was no hiding it. There probably wouldn't have been any hiding it anyway, but he kind of outed it, you know, with some people that he worked with at Baker Center. And then, so I just didn't really know who knew, but I just felt such shame. So then I had to tell a few people because I realized so many people knew, but I kind of just didn't talk about it. And people would ask about Luke. So there was this secret when the Athens Film Festival, you know, shows this Leave It to Levi, I'm completely out. I came out with Luke as a porn star when the movie came out and we went to Mexico with it. I shared it on Facebook that my son does porn and I'm okay with it. Notice I didn't say I celebrate it, you know, and I don't have to say I celebrate it. He celebrates it. He's, you know, it's his life, but, it was a coming out of the closet, if you will. I'm the mom of a porn star and I love him and I don't care.
For Luke at the end of the film, you came back to Athens to perform in a drag show at the Dairy Barn, which is like a beautiful sort of emotional sequence there. I'm wondering, how did it feel to like bring your drag persona and this whole like new part of your life back here, even for just a little bit?
Oh, it just felt very good.
Yeah.
Just very good because I think especially because as I still learn, as we all live to like, I don't want to get, sorry. I just felt happy. And it was great to bring Sassy to Athens because Sassy is like a job that's not porn. So it's like a job that I can celebrate with my mom. It's great to also have a passion and a job that you are able to share with your mom, which I guess that's what a lot of people have all the time. And I decided to take a different route where you don't have as much of a shared relationship on your job. So I guess it was just why it was so exciting is because of that. That brings me a lot of joy.
And I guess I can pose the question, you know, and to you as well, what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, it was fun, and of course you'll see that people who see the film will see how happy I was that evening. There were people there who didn't know, you know, that Luke was going to be part of that show. Didn't know Luke did drag, so there was a little bit of surprise there for some people, and that was fun. There was a woman therapist that I saw a few times, and she also knew Luke, and the three of us had a little mini moment that was pretty fun. That's not in the film, but it was gratifying.
I remember that. She was super nice.
Yeah, and there she could see that things were good, and she had actually told us things were good between us. Yeah, she wasn't worried about us like I was. But anyway, no, it was great to see her there. And the drag queen that put that show together, Roger, what's Roger's drag name?
Oh, Veronica Lake.
Yeah, Veronica Lake put that show together. And of course, Veronica Lake is Roger, a hairstylist at Attractions. He's been cutting hair in Athens for probably 40 years, and he's been about the best ambassador for gay rights in Athens. I mean, he does all these little old lady country club ladies who probably, you know, never thought about, you know, LGBT stuff, and they love him. And And he has a following, and I don't know, you know, it brought together, that show brought together a lot of it, a lot of different folks.
Well, I guess I feel like at the heart of this film, there is like a real commentary on the kind of relationship a mother has with their child. And I was curious if, because by the end of the film, there's such a warmth between you two and such a connection. Do you feel like purposefully documenting it in a way where it would become a film, did that help the relationship, or did a lot of that happen off screen?
I think maybe it happened off screen. I guess I don't think the film did anything to our relationship. I think everything that the film did was that was actually just captured our relationship, if that makes sense.
I was a single mom when I adopted Luke, and I often wished I could provide a father for Luke, but there were a couple of men who were important to Luke as he was growing up, but pretty much it was the Luke and Anne show. And I did my very best. I couldn't have loved a person more deeply than I have loved Luke. He has brought me immeasurable joy from day one meeting him, but also some pretty serious sorrow, some pretty serious pain. And I think the most painful part of my relationship with Luke came during about that first year or two of the porn. I was so afraid. I was afraid for his future. I was afraid he'd get AIDS. I was afraid he'd be drug addicted. I was afraid he could never have some other job after having been part of the porn industry. I was afraid he'd never find a man to love and settle down with. I was, I told you about the shame thing. I was just worried about, everything. And I, at some point, I realized, and I, by the way, I never cut off the relationship with him. Never. I couldn't have done that. I couldn't have done that. But it was strange. And I just kind of wouldn't talk about porn with him. I wouldn't talk about Jake or RJ or videos they were doing or where they were going. Even he got a lot of travel, which was a real good thing that happened. But anyway, I was a little jealous about the travel part. Your psyche will only allow you to be in pain for so long. And, you just have to let it go. You have to let go of those worries and just stop it. And I think I had a moment when Luke was home to visit, and I'll share this because it was kind of cute. He was in the shower and he started singing in the shower like the Luke I always knew, right? And I always loved how he'd sing in the shower because it's a sign of being happy, right? And I thought, okay, that's my son. That's still Luke. It's not some, it's not some stranger I can't relate to. That's still my son in there singing in the shower. And as I began to get to know Jake and RJ and see that they weren't using him as a piece of merchandise, okay, which is what I thought, that they weren't using him to get rich off of, I started to see them as real men who actually care about Luke. And I know that may sound crazy, but you'll have to believe me, they love him. And the people that he works with, including Jake and RJ, are really his family. I just came to accept it. And no, it wasn't overnight. It was a little at a time, but it was really just seeing who they were and also realizing that Luke was still Luke. And no, I can't watch his porn. I can't share in that part of his, oh God, imagine that. I can't share in that part of his life, but I know about it. And now I'm copping to knowing about it and actually being okay with it.
Thank you both so much for that. That made me tear up. I can't imagine how that feels for you too. I almost turned off my camera because I was like, I'm going to start crying and this isn't even me we're talking about, but. Thank you both so much for that. I believe Danny's got a good follow-up for that.
Yeah. So this is something I'm just really interested in. for both of you, if you could speak to other parents and children who might be in the same situation as you were just a few years ago, what advice would you give them about like how to understand each other and sort of bridge that gap?
I'll go first because I feel like mine's short. is to just know at the end of the day, your parents love you. So whatever they say or do, if it sounds wrong or weird, it's or out of fear or out of anger or anything that it, at the end of the day, they do. There's unconditional love between parents, and that's always gonna be there. Or I guess maybe that's just me. I don't know. I'm just very lucky because I have my mom. But what would advice? I guess, you know, give your parents a break, because if you are the child, you're going to be problematic. But the love is going to always be there, so don't worry.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you're right. I got a longer answer. First of all, I would ask the sons and daughters to open up and be honest. You know, it was my best friend who ended up telling me, and she's a great person. She's a great person. And to have to hear it from her, oh my God, it was the worst. So be honest with your parent. It would be advice for the kid. But for the parent, I would just say, you know, don't blame yourself. You know, we don't really get credit. Our kids do what they're going to do, and they accomplish what they're going to accomplish or fail to accomplish what they fail to accomplish. And it isn't as much about us as we might think, you know? So don't take the burden of it all on your shoulders, and don't worry about it. And who knows, you know, it might just turn out okay, I guess. I liken what happened to me though, you know, when Luke first came out as gay, I thought he came out too soon. I was worried that people were going to be mean to him, that the rednecks in Athens were going to beat up on him, and I was worried for his safety. I was also worried about me and my reputation. Okay, that's just honesty there. All right. And what this film taught me was, or having this experience with Luke doing porn, is that was like me being in the closet. I didn't want to tell anybody. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't tell the truth. It felt so much better to get it out there, to be in this film, to just say, hey, yeah, yeah. And so, while I don't know that you need to advertise your kid does porn or your kid does whatever, there also, you know, there has to be an acceptance. You just have to work on that. It doesn't have to happen right away.
Yeah.
That's it.
I love that.
Yeah, because Anne, I think your journey from the way, like emotional journey from the way you've described it, and definitely what's seen in the film is sort of this like disillusion of the social stigmas surrounding porn. And I wonder if in what you went through, you think there's like a larger lesson there that like maybe our culture is also kind of learning.
Let's hope so. I think, too, my brother pointed this out. He said that you can also look at it as parents whose expectations, you know, were somehow altered along the way. You say that you want your kids to find their own way in the world, right? But there are a lot of parents who weigh in on every decision that their adult kids make. And, you know, that notion of you, the parent, you don't get to say what it is your kid does with his or her life. And I've always said that, but man, he held me to it, didn't he?
I guess I did.
You know, I mean, I actually made a short list one time as to what careers I would have chosen after porn star. And the list was really short. It was really short. I don't remember what was on there now, but you know, he just drove that lesson home in a major, major way. So, but it was a good one. It was a good one. It's freeing for me to know that he absolutely gets to choose. You know, I would love for him to find a husband one of these days real soon, but I don't talk about it very much, you know, because it's not for me to decide that.
I just don't want a husband.
So instead I focus on get to the dentist, get to the doctor, sure. Get your taxes done.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. Thank you for that answer. That's great. Yeah. Thank you both so much. I don't think I had any. Emily, did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, I just thank you both so much for your time. I mean, what we've been privileged to be able to do some really cool interviews, and this has been a really, really great one. So thank you so much.
To find future episodes of the podcast, please visit woub.org/culture. This podcast was produced by me, along with Emily Votaw, and special thanks to the director of the film festival, David Colagiovanni. My name is Danny Wasserman, and I'll see you next time.